Hi, Bee Culture listeners. I'm James Tew. I'm a columnist for Bee Culture magazine, and I'm presenting the article I've written for the January 2023 issue of Bee Culture. I've entitled it, Dealing with Beekeeper Guilt Caused by Reduced Beekeeping Practices. Listeners, I need to tell you straight up that one of my motivations for considering this piece was that my entire career, I've had to deal with beekeepers as much as bees. It's a similar, but in other ways, totally different world. To this day, I can't tell you what really appeals to someone enough to make them become a beekeeper. I can't tell you why after 51 or 52 years, I'm still a beekeeper. It's just part of me. So things change, though, don't they, listeners? And as those changes come and go, it has a direct effect on our beekeeping time, energy. I mean, it's common knowledge for me that I will kind of go cool now through January and February, but in March, my energy will begin to wake up, as does the bees, and I will start yet another year of trying to keep bees. So this was on my mind when I began to put together my comments and thoughts for this month. I start by saying, this is not a negative article. While it may sound like it is, this is not a negative article. However, it is a realistic piece. Many articles in Bee Culture magazine present beekeeping management information that help the evolving beekeeper manage their colonies perfectly. Yes, problems and challenges will always arise, but when they do, some of the published articles explain what procedures would be required to get the colonies back to high standards. That's always the goal. Perfect colonies and a perfect yard. It's a lofty aim. A beekeeper is not a standard designation. The ability and energy of individual beekeepers are all over the page. Few things about us, as a group, are standardized. But to many of the population of this country who do not keep bees and know nearly nothing about them, being a beekeeper is a unique designation. When viewed by this large group, all beekeepers are seen as being the same, cookie cut, as it were. Yet within our group, there are beekeepers who are on the job night and day, and their colonies normally show the positive results of their energy allocation. But there are also beekeepers who are not able or not inclined to contribute large amounts of their life's resources to managing their bees. The colonies of this group may or may not show the effects of their laissez-faire philosophy of bee colony management. It's difficult not to be judgmental, isn't it? It would seem that every beekeeper should strive for perfection beekeeping. I sense that's never going to happen. It's not just beekeeping. For instance, as you drive down a suburban street, have a look at the variation of the home maintenance and landscape each house has. Some homes are perfectly manicured, while others have not been given the same level of attention. Is one homeowner more deserving of respect than another? It depends, doesn't it? Are city ordinances being violated? Is clutter excessive? If the homeowner basics are being met, do we not expect some homes to be better maintained than others? Common reasons for this variation are simply innumerable. It's just the way things are, and the same is true with beekeepers. Bees are not pets. Bees are not actually pets, but they have commonality with pets and other domestic livestock. Obviously, pets and livestock must be nurtured and maintained. In fact, they are protected in many legal and moral ways. Listeners, at this point, I show a picture of my grandson's dog, a white lab named Bowser. And I tell you that in the picture that this is a perfect example of a pet. Due to the challenges like varroa predation, honeybees are similar to pets and domestic animals. Without human assistance, managed honeybee colonies would not normally thrive. Colony decline and death are the frequent outcomes. So beekeepers, you need to take care of your bees. But the devil is in the details. Exactly how much care is necessary? It gets really tricky at this point. Bees are wild animals and as such should be able to fend for themselves without human assistance. Yes, that's true, but feral honeybees conduct their natural lives differently in several notable ways. In the wild, colonies do not normally grow nearly as large as managed colonies, and they do not produce as much surplus honey. Plus, they swarm more often. A wild colony provides incidental pollination rather than directed pollination. For instance, you can't move a feral colony to a commercial apple orchard. And finally, and importantly, they frequently die during the winter. At this point, enter the beekeeper and their artificial domiciles. For the bees in managed hives, many things change. Beekeeper care is required to help the colony thrive under these artificial conditions. But again, exactly how much care is necessary? Everything changes. In life's big picture, everything changes. As we age, many things about our lives change too. When change comes our way, we adapt, we reallocate, we improvise, we refurbish ourselves. As life's things morph, we do whatever it takes to embrace and incorporate the changes and to push our lives forward. We really have no other choice. Beekeepers and their relationship with their bees are no different. A dedicated beekeeper may not always be able to commit to all the demands that perfection beekeeping requires. Should they quit the craft? No. But they will need to adapt and reallocate the resources they still have. Sloppy beekeeping. I am not condoning sloppy beekeeping, and I feel that I need to say that again. In this article I'm presenting to you, I am not condoning sloppy beekeeping. But sometimes, try as we might, things change in our lives and our energy and commitment to our bees can seem to approach something that resembles sloppy beekeeping. Job changes, health changes, monetary changes, marital changes, or societal changes are examples that can cause a staid beekeeper to have to consider a restructured management level compared to the level that they were previously maintaining. Sometimes these changes are temporary, while in other instances, they're permanent. Blended beekeeping. Listeners, is what I am naming sloppy beekeepers simply blended beekeeping? For instance, let's say that things have changed and we are forced to back down our commitment and contribution to the bees' way of life. If the bees can't make up the difference, they're most likely going to die. In my view, this mix of feral schemes with managed schemes could be named blended beekeeping. Things change. Okay, it happened. Big changes have occurred. Let's say the beekeeper retired and had experienced some health declines, but they're still devoted to beekeeping. What are some ways that they can adapt and alter their beekeeping protocols? Be a hobby beekeeper. Bluntly, if big changes are coming your way and you want to stay in beekeeping, you should most likely consider being a hobby beekeeper. Proficient sideline and commercial beekeepers are already being as cost and labor conscious as possible. They live in a different management world and are answering to different management mandates. It's the hobby beekeeper who can reduce or alter their standards without serious retribution. The apiary. There are no lawnmowers, string trimmers, and herbicides in the bee's natural world. That's all on us. In perfection beekeeping, the grass and weeds are kept and mowed and trimmed. Yes, colonies with artificially low entrances will probably appreciate this work, but will uncut grass be the primary reason that a colony dies during the winter? Probably not. Will the apiary look scruffy and not be very photogenic? Definitely. But if the weeds and the brush are allowed to truly run rampant, the beekeeper will nearly be unable to walk to the colonies, much less remove honey or perform colony manipulations. Maybe the recommendation should be to cut back, but don't cut out, weed maintenance. The hive equipment. Even in reduced labor and energy situations, hive equipment should be assembled correctly. When filled with bees or honey, equipment will surely be stressed as it's moved and manipulated. If you're having strength and health issues, heavy hive equipment will sometimes be handled roughly, even dropped. At this point, I give a picture of a perfectly sound beehive, but by perfection beekeeping standards, it needs several good coats of paint and a little bit of maintenance. But I can assure you that as so much as they can be, the bees are happy inside this unloved, too deep colony. Back to the story. Either paint or don't paint. Maybe paint it only once and forget it. Listeners, in all honesty, that comment's really painful for me to write. My dad had a paint supply business. I spent my early life dealing with all things paint. And now I'm suggesting that you cut out painting, so I feel kind of odd here to my departed dad. Yes, thorough paint applications would help wooden equipment last a bit longer, and it would definitely look better. Listeners, but really, how much longer will it actually last? Or is looking good the primary goal? Maybe the recommendation should be to assemble the equipment soundly, but if necessary, skimp on the protective coatings. It's distasteful, isn't it? Colony manipulations. Colony opening events can be significantly reduced if labor and energy are to be lessened. After a new beekeeper has acquired the necessary basic skills, whimsically opening a colony is not often necessary. Much can be determined by simply being aware of the season of the year and reading entrance detritus evidence. But make no mistake here, reducing colony manipulations will limit the beekeeper's ability to stay intimately aware of the colony's condition. But the question re-arises at this point. Listeners, how many colony manipulations are necessary to meet the minimum? Oh, there's an unanswered question. How much are you willing to give up? Lost swarms. All beekeepers at all levels will lose the occasional swarm. Alternatively, sometimes all beekeepers will acquire a swarm that moves into empty equipment, or they will acquire a free swarm that they hive. Either way, Swarms happen. They come and they go. But reduced colony manipulations will require the beekeeper to be more tolerant of lost swarms. Queen productivity. The more committed a beekeeper is to their colony's management in general, the more anxious they are about the queen stock heading their colonies. Again, be aware of the season. A beekeeper who has elected to implement blended beekeeping concepts should know what a suitable pattern looks like during that season. In this way, the investigative beekeeper evaluates the seasonal brood and brood pattern rather than the actual queen. In many instances, no effort at all is made to see the queen. Just the eggs, or seeing the queen's brood pattern, is normally enough for a quick inspection. Then I show a picture of a brood pattern, primarily of cap brood, with quite a bit of open comb in the center where the brood's already emerged. And in Photoshop, I could see the eggs that were in some of those cells. So I make the comment and the caption that this is a good brood frame. In the photo processor, there are visible eggs in the center of the comb. So, no need to find the queen here. I don't sense a strong argument for the minimalist beekeeper heavily investing in high-quality replacement queens. Escape swarms will most likely be an issue, and they will take costly replacement queens with them. If one is not making splits or is not suppressing swarming and has only a casual interest in surplus honey production, naturally produced queens will meet most needs. Just to be sure, for all beekeepers, marked queens are a good idea. Yes, reducing queen management will greatly reduce time and economic demands, but at the same time, that management pathway will reduce overall colony productivity. Can you, or should you, live with that fact? Mite management. Like swarm suppression or queen management, Varroa mite control requires time, labor, and money. Listeners, this is a serious aspect of honeybee management. If the beekeeper does not implement a conscientious mite control program, most likely that colony will die and will produce mites that will invade surrounding colonies not yet dead. Managing mites is one of those instances when the colony should be opened for treatment. There are few ways to cut corners on this issue. If the beekeeper does not implement mite repression programs, then next spring, to replace dead outs, the beekeeper will be required to purchase packages, splits, some bees, from other beekeepers who did implement such programs. I really can't see that much money or labor will be saved by taking this tack. Honey processing. Supplemental honey removal and processing is a huge labor and energy drain. In past articles in this magazine, I've written that honey processing is not beekeeping. In fact, I know a few specialists who only process honey and actually have very few colonies of their own. They contract process honey for other beekeepers. They take on that dirty job, if I could word it that way. In the bright light of reality, capped honey can be taken off at any time of the year, even in the dead of winter. I don't know why you would want to do that, since it only makes for a miserable, cold job, but neither do I know your exact situation. Before extracting, frigid honey would need to be allowed to warm up, but not held too long. Without bees to protect it, that warming interlude gives an opportunity for small hive beetles and wax moths to begin damaging the combs. Other than producing comb honey, I cannot think of a way to easily short-circuit the cumbersome process of setting up an extractor and dealing with the folder all that comes from honey processing. I suppose that contract processing would be a viable alternative. Dramatically, one could simply leave the surplus honey on the wintering colony. Even for the reduced labor beekeeper in cold climates, I would suggest wintering the colony in one or two deeps and moving the capped honey above the inner cover. In this way, theoretically, the colony could better manage its wintering environment. Honey held like this could be used the next spring as supplemental food for initiating replacement colonies or for giving food to other needy colonies in the apiary. My point in this piece is that there are beekeepers who, for whatever reason, cannot or do not commit to maximally managing their colonies. Representatives from this group are rarely asked to give presentations on their management procedures. There are no articles published in bee magazines for this group, and these beekeepers rarely speak out at meetings. They quietly hang on. We all have our reasons and procedures that allow us to continue to coexist with our bees. As I wrote above, the ability and energy of individual beekeepers are all over the page. There is no standard beekeepers. Thank you for listening to this piece. The only closing comment I have is that I included a footnote about painting equipment. Specifically, I wrote that plastic hive equipment made of expanded plastic foam should be painted. Otherwise, its useful life is significantly shortened. That's it. I hope you don't see this as a negative article. People change, but the bees don't. And this was my effort to address the fact that some beekeepers are fighting different battles in different ways. I hope to talk to you again sometime. Thank you for listening. Again, I'm Jim Tew, columnist for Bee Culture Magazine. Goodbye.